Hello, podcasters, and welcome again to this series of podcasts brought to you in association with Kilkenny Library Service and the Government's Decade of Centenaries Fund through Kilkenny County Council. My name is Owen Swinton Welch, and in these podcasts, we examine different aspects of Kilkenny's revolutionary era history. Now, one of the most ingrained memories of the average person who lived through the Civil War period was the near constant disruption to the railway network. If we could go back in time and ask our parents or grandparents or even great-grandparents about their experience of these troubled times, perhaps surprisingly, trains might be near the top of the list. From the beginning of the Civil War, the anti-treaty IRA leader, that's Liam Lynch, issued orders for the destruction of the rail infrastructure across the country. He explained his logic as such, quote, 100 bridges blown up was just as effective a blow as 100 barracks blown up, end quote. Now, the main objective of this policy was to block the movement of Free State troops and equipment by rail, while sometimes also having the added benefit of commandeering supplies for the anti-treaty cause. Another reason for attacking the railway network was to try and stop the Free State government from functioning. In other words, to near bankrupt the new Free State at birth by paying out compensation to replace all the lost infrastructure. From the anti-treaty perspective, the Free State government were seen as traitors who had compromised too far with the British and lost the Republic. In addition to all this, the anti-treaty IRA had also reinstated the independence-era Belfast boycott. This meant that goods that originated from the new stateless of Northern Ireland were to be confiscated from the trains. The principle of this was to support the nationalists in the north who were facing mass violence and forced evictions at this time. Now, to complicate matters even further, the railway network at this time in question was in private ownership, so not the state or semi-state company that it is today. For instance, the Great Southern and Western Railway Company operated a large portion of the rail network in the southern half of the country, which included all of the rail lines in County Kilkenny. The companies themselves often received threats from the anti-treaty side, warning them against repairing the damage to the tracks, as it would be perceived as aiding and abetting the provisional or Free State government. The railway companies sometimes heeded these threats, as it was easier and often more financially neutral to do nothing, as even if the lines were fixed, they could just as easily be destroyed again. As attacks became more widespread, the rail companies demanded compensation from the provisional government before they would repair the network. Now, from the Free State Army perspective, they could do very little to stop these attacks as they couldn't defend every single mile of track in the country. Their main policy during the Civil War was to capture and intern people who they believed were in or even remotely associated with the anti-treaty IRA. This would reduce rail attacks amongst other things. However, later in the Civil War conflict and throughout 1923, armoured trains were introduced. These were trains which had the additional carriage of a rail-borne Lancia armoured cars, usually with machine guns attached, which were there to protect the train and carriages if they came under attack. It was hoped the size of these alone would deter would-be attackers, which to be fair, it mostly did. Then during the Civil War, the Free State Army even set up a separate section of the army purely for the protection of the railway network. These were known as the Railway Protection and Maintenance Corps. Now, during the first weeks of the Civil War in August 1922, anti-treaty leaders sent a letter to the Secretary of the Irish Engineering Union, which had many rail employees amongst its members. These employees, of course, would be affected by the disruption and often were laid off on lines that couldn't function anymore. The letter gives us an insight into the mindset of the anti-treaty forces at the time. They explained to the union leaders the reasons for targeting the rail network. It contained the following, quote, "Unless absolutely essential, we are reluctant to interfere with these rail services, which are a convenience to the civil population. This decision, however, has been forced upon us, as the railway authorities give allegiance to the so-called provisional government and organise labour, that meaning the unions, has up to the present freely cooperated in assisting the Free State and the British government in their attempts to exterminate the Republican forces. Therefore, members of your trade union who assist the enemy forces will be considered combatants of the war. End quote. Now, I suppose in purely military terms, the anti-treaty policy of targeting the rail network could be classed to have been a successful military strategy of the anti-treaty IRA, as it severely discommoded the Free State Army. However, destroying the rail network also caused a great deal of upheaval to the general populace. The negative publicity was one of the main reasons the IRA had not pushed a similar strategy during the War of Independence era, as the majority of public opinion was now likely against the anti-treaty IRA already. They had very little to lose. They could claim victory in that particular battle of the Civil War, but in the war of minds of the public, they certainly would have lost. And if I can just say a general word about trains, it is impossible to underestimate the value of the trains to ordinary members of the Kilkenny public in 1923. Since their introduction just around 70 years earlier, basically from the late 1840s and specifically in the early 1850s with regards to Kilkenny, trains had become a vital lifeline and opened up travel to the masses. The first line came to Kilkenny from Dublin via Kildare Carlow and terminated in Kilkenny City. This was later extended to Thomastown. The Thomastown to Waterford section was the last section. The complex engineering job of building a bridge over the River Nore in Thomastown being the last piece of infrastructure. Staying in the south of the county, the separate Limerick to Waterford line, which still passes through South Kilkenny, had amongst its engineering staff a famous Kilkenny man. James Stevens from Black Mill Street was one of the engineers on that project, but had to go on the run after his participation in the 1848 rebellion. Now, back in 1923, cars were still a luxury in Kilkenny. It was still the era of the pony and trap, or perhaps bicycles for those who could afford them. So the train offered a lifeline. It was often used for short journeys between villages and towns in the county. So for example, people used to get the train from Munlavat to Ballyhale or Thomastown to Bennisbridge or Kilkenny to Goran, these kind of journeys. Commuter, I suppose you'd call them nowadays. It is also very important not to forget that during this era in question, in addition to commuting, trains were also used widely to transport post and goods around the country, including the all-important daily newspapers. Thus, the disruption to the railways affected the lives of people both directly and indirectly. So even for those who rarely set foot on a train, their lives could be upended by what was happening during the Civil War. It's also important to note that the rail infrastructure of the country in 1923 was immense, much more extensive than is the case today. Kilkenny City had two routes you could travel. As mentioned, one line passed near Kilkenny City and went towards Carlow Town in one direction and Waterford in the other direction. This line is the most familiar to people today, as it is still the main route to the capital. There was another line, however, that left Kilkenny City from McDonough Station, as we call it today, and travelled north-westwards, passing through Ballyragis before terminating in Port Laois for onward connection to Dublin or Cork in the other direction. This line from Kilkenny City to Port Laois is no longer in use, but some of the old infrastructure exists. Most obvious is the old bridge that is still there on John's Green in Kilkenny City, near the Champagne restaurant or John's Green post office there, you might notice, or passed under the archways. Unfortunately, the bridge that crossed over the Castlecomer Road there at McDonough Junction is long since taken down. Furthermore, there were additional branches that left this line, which linked the coal fields in and around Castlecomer to the main railway network for the delivery of coal, of course. Now, the people in the east of the county were serviced by a branch of the Wexford line, which passed very close to the village of Gore's Bridge. Now, there was also many more railway stops or stations along the line than currently exist today. So, for example, there was railway stops in Castlecomer, Ballyragis, Paulstown, Bennett's Bridge, Gower's Bridge, the aforementioned Ballyhalen, and also Kilmacow had a station. In the far south, the Limerick to Waterford Rosslare train line dissected the south of the county, roughly horizontally, passing through the parishes of Piltown, Munkine, Kilmacow, Slieveroo and Glenmore. This line was also used by people in the south of the county for travelling to Dublin via Wicklow. Now, unfortunately for the public, not a week of the Civil War passed without some reports of attacks on the railway network. On the less severe end of the spectrum, this involved the severing of signal cables or the cutting of trees onto tracks. More serious cases involved digging up tracks, blowing up bridges and setting fire to train stations. In addition, trains were often held up by the anti-treaty IRA with passengers searched, posts taken, that was for intelligence purposes, and goods commandeered. From the point of view of the anti-treaty rank and file, the ordinary soldier, attacking the rail network in rural parts of the county offered a way of helping the cause with little risk of being captured or killed in the process. You also didn't need to expend a huge amount of ammunition to do the tasks, which was of course in short supply. Now, the most frequent attacks appeared to be the southeast of the county, which had no permanent Free State Army presence, so that could be a factor in the heightened attacks there. For instance, in September 22, a goods train was stopped by a group of anti-treaty IRA men at Luke's Well, Mull na Bhas. The carriages were detached before the train was purposely derailed by travelling at full speed over the tracks that had been dug up. It resulted in extensive damage being caused to the locomotive. Examples of other occurrences can be derived from reports of the railway companies themselves. An account about an incident in Ballyhale station on the 3rd of October 1922 stated as follows, quote, "As the train leaves the station, the driver sees some individuals at the line side acting in a suspicious manner. When the train passes them, one man hurls a missile, that's a grenade, which lands inside a full carriage. Seated with the civilian passengers are Lieutenants Foley and O'Rourke of the Free State Army, who promptly dispose of the bomb through a window before it can explode." End quote. In another reported event in Glenmore on the 3rd of November 1922, a train is held up and raided just a few kilometres outside Waterford City. Quote, "The evening Waterford to Dublin mail train is held up at a steep embankment near Glenmore Station. 12 armed men who order passengers to remain in their seats and not look out the windows. They painstakingly search the parcels. They are apparently looking for articles of clothing, expecting to find a large consignment of wearing apparel and bicycles from Waterford firms. The search lasts nearly an hour, after which some bicycles and parcels are removed and the train allowed to proceed. It reaches Westland Road, Dublin, 2 hours behind schedule." End quote. Now, we can only surmise what they were looking for. It could be the fact that they wanted the wearing apparel and the bicycles for anti-treaty activities, or it could be that the Waterford firms were supplying these materials to Northern Ireland, which of course there was a boycott on at the time. Now, the methods used by the anti-treaty forces to attack the train network also varied over the course of the Civil War. In other words, as the Civil War dragged on, attacks became a lot more serious and destructive. In Ratpatrick, Slieveroo, in January 1923, a train was forced to stop by a party of anti-treaty IRA who blocked the tracks and fired shots at the driver's compartment to force him to comply. The 18 carriages attached to the train, which included livestock and passengers, were detached. The locomotive was then driven at full steam towards a section of the track that had previously been lifted. The train then derailed at this point and crashed down the embankment before coming to a standstill on the public road underneath. A near identical incident had occurred in Thomastown in November 1922, except the wagons were not detached and the goods crashed with the locomotive. In January 1923, a train was also derailed at New Ra, Kilmacow, near Waterford, after the tracks were broken near Dunkiss. Similarly, tracks were also dug up in Dunmore, north of Kilkenny City. Another tactic employed by the anti-treaty IRA in its war against the railways was the destruction of some of the more rural train stations. Bennett's Bridge, Grain Station in Munkine and Fidown Station in Piltown were all set alight, causing various amounts of damage, which the Free State Government subsequently had to pay out compensation for. Glenmore was the scene of another attack on the 6th of February 1923 when an anti-Treaty IRA column opened fire on a passing train. The train was carrying a number of Free State soldiers. No one was seriously injured, although the windows of the carriages were shattered in the altercation. Now, on the 10th of February 1923, some unfortunate passengers taking the 11 a.m. train from Limerick to Waterford experienced two hold-ups and two derailments on the one journey. Talk about bad luck. The trip had proceeded as usual from Limerick until just outside the village of Kilsheelan in South Tipperary. The train was captured by a party of anti-Treaty IRA and derailed. The passengers had to walk a number of kilometres to Kilsheelan station, where a motor car brought them onwards to Carrick-on-Shore. After waiting in Carrick for some time, they eventually boarded a special train, which was a train sent from Waterford specifically to collect the stranded travellers. However, just near the village of Munkine, this special train was again held up. One of the passengers on the train described in vivid detail exactly what occurred at Munkine in what must have seemed like a long day and terrifying day, no doubt, for the passengers on board. Quote, "All went well until we arrived at about a quarter of a mile at the Waterford side of Grange Station." So that's in the townlands of Ballincor or Ratcorby, Munkine. "Then, for the second time that day, I was to bear a further volley of shots. This time, as far as I could gather, discharged from a machine gun. As on the occasion of the earlier derailment, all passengers promptly threw themselves on the floor and the train was brought to a standstill. At this time it was pitch dark. By the light of the train we were able to discern the arrival on the scene of some 20 armed anti-treaty men. All passengers were ordered off. The raiders apologised for the inconvenience they were causing, and in the case of one lady passenger, who was accompanied by her three children, permission was granted for the removal of her trunks from the train. An escort was then provided, and under their direction, the passengers were conveyed about a quarter of a mile away, where they were shown the road. Unfortunately for us, it was not the main road. As we left the permanent way, we observed some of the armed party digging holes in the railway bridge at this point, and we presumed that they were about to lay mines or bombs. On gaining the road, we found ourselves walking in some feet of mud and slush. The passengers proceeding in the direction of Waterford, which was about 7 kilometres away at this stage. When we arrived on a hill about a mile from the scene of the hold-up, we heard the engine being put under steam, that's acceleration, and the next we saw on looking around was a blazing train rapidly approaching the railway bridge. As the train proceeded towards the bridge, we heard the noise of several loud explosions, which I took to be bombs. When the train arrived at the bridge, there was a terrific detonation, and from our position, it appeared to us that the train had toppled over the bridge and onto the road below. Even in this position, the fired train continued to burn brightly, lighting up the whole countryside. Even when we arrived at the outskirts of Waterford City shortly before 7 o'clock that evening, we could still see the lurid reflection in the sky." End quote. Now, some weeks later, an armoured train with a 20-ton crane attached arrived at the scene. This train, driven by a Belgian man, Colonel Nouse of the Free States Army, arrived in Munkine to remove the wreckage of the train and bring it away. Now, as can be deduced, the destruction of the railway bridges sometimes afforded the anti-treaty IRA the added bonus, if you can call it that, of blocking a main road. So a similar incident to what I just described occurred in the north of the county when a large train bridge on the road between Paulstown and Bagnallstown at a place called the Royal Oak was blown up, which had a net effect of completely blocking the main road from Kilkenny and Carlow and hence to Dublin. At one point in February and March 1923, both lines in the north of the county were out of action, which completely cut the rail link to Dublin. The Carlow line had been destroyed near Paulstown, as we mentioned, while the Portlaoise line had been damaged due to a deliberate train derailment in County Laois. By the middle of March 1923, the county councillors in Kilkenny voted on a motion asking for help for the people of Goran, who were now completely cut off. In a meeting presided over by the mayor, Peter De Lucri, Councillor Slater declared the following, quote, "We, the mayor and corporation of Kilkenny, being fully au fait with the terrible hardship that the blocking of the railway lines between Kilkenny and Carlow has inflicted on the commercial community and general public of Goran, make a strong and respectful appeal to the worthy president of the government, that being W.T. Cosgrave, to use his powerful influence on behalf of his constituents, with a view to arranging a small goods train to run from Kilkenny to Goran, say once a week, pending the restoration of the line." Alderman Slater said the people of Goran have been suffering under a great hardship for some time past. They were in a very bad way on the matter of getting goods. He had heard of a trader in Goran who had a ton of flour at Kilkenny railway station, but through not being able to get it carted to Goran, had to sell it in Kilkenny. End quote. And even during the final weeks of the Civil War, the Kilkenny to Waterford line was still subject to attack, as this report attested to. Quote, "The railway line between Ballyhale and Munlavat was found to have been torn up on Friday last, that being the 6th of April 1923. Four lengths of rails were also torn up on Wednesday morning between Thomastown and Bennisbridge. Farmers travelling to the Kilkenny Fair were very much disappointed and were obliged to travel by motor, but arrived too late for the cattle fair." End quote. Now, following all this destruction, the provisional government were of course required to pay compensation to the rail companies, as it needed the routes to be in working order. This would amount to millions of pounds by the end of the Civil War. Considering the country basically ran on £25 million income a year, by the end of the Civil War, the millions in rail compensation nearly amounted to 1 year's income for the Free States, if you included the cost of the Free States Army in that. The largest rail company operating in Ireland, the Great Southern and Western Railway, which controlled all the Kilkenny lines, estimated 773 instances of damage to bridges, stations or carriages in the first 6 months of the Civil War. They also calculated that 200 trains or stations were raided and that there was 302 instances of damage or destruction to signalling equipment. The huge material cost to the rail network was the pretext used by the companies to insist on a 3 shilling 6 pence reduction in the wages for all the rail employees across the board by 1923. Just to give a local compensation example, the railway company was given £899, 8 shillings and 8 pence, to rebuild the small station in Grange, Munkine, which had been burnt down. Now, that was many times the annual salary of the average rail worker. Even during the Civil War, there was much debate in government in regards to nationalising the railways. The headaches caused by the war must have encouraged many of the shareholders to part with their assets as quickly as possible in the years afterwards. So, just to sum things up there, the war against trains was one of the most divisive aspects of the Civil War and affected everyone, irrespective of creed or class, indirectly or directly. In the early years of the Free State, the rail companies were amalgamated and became state-owned. This, of course, allowed for the closure of many lines under the rationalisation policy of the late 1950s and early 1960s. Yes, another severe blow to the much-loved railways. But at least the nationalisation allowed the government more recently to reduce the price of train fares across the board. We in Ireland now have some of the cheapest train fares in Europe, especially compared to our near neighbours who don't have nationalised railways. The fact that pensioners are also entitled to free travel on trains is another benefit of having the railways under state control. It is not an entitlement enjoyed by many pensioners across Europe. Indeed, at the time of speaking, there are talks of reopening closed railway lines around the country, including in Forlán Donegal, which is the only county without a train line today, although they had one back in 1923. Perhaps then the 21st century will see the rebirth of the railways, this time primarily because of their greener credentials to the environment than cars. So perhaps they will return to their past glory of 100 years earlier in 1923, minus the blown up tracks, of course. And I think that's where we leave it there today. Just to thank you all once again for listening, and don't forget to join your local library to avail of all the brilliant free resources. Until next time.